It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. My name is Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical.
Let's biblical style it up.
But before we do that, we have a couple of ground rules to cover.
Such as, I'm the ex-Christian, I was raised Presbyterian, and I'm now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. Also, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it's not for children, because we cuss a bunch and say naughty secret words.
Secret words they were never meant to know.
Normally, I read the New International Version of the Bible and you read the New Revised Standard Version, but today we are throwing those out the window.
Don't worry,
we've got a lot of spares.
It's a literal hail of Bibles on our street. The neighbors hate us.
We hit the dog. The dog needed Jesus.
As far as we could tell, from the distance of the third story. But why did we throw all our Bibles out and endanger our reputation in our community?
Well, we have a very important text to bring to you today. And that text is the Gospel of Thomas.
Gospel of Thomas. This is a Gnostic gospel.
Gnostic, apocryphal, all the crazy secret adjectives that kept it out of the real canonical Bible.
And out of the hands, like, of true seekers like you.
Yeah. Trueseeker.biz is just handing out Gospels of Thomas left and right.
Your one-stop Gnostic gospel shop.
Yeah, totally.
One-stop apocryphal Gnostic gospel shop.
So before we get into the Gospel of Thomas, we got to do like a Gnostic primer.
Okay.
Because this shit is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I did a lot of research on it.
So that's not going to waste. Somebody's going to hear about it, listeners.
Yeah, so somebody's got to fucking hear about it.
Better you than me, frankly.
So
I'm going to be reading a book, I guess. I don't know.
There were two big archaeological finds in the 20th century that really, like, changed our knowledge of the Bible.
Right. One was when Brendan Fraser cracked open that mummy's tomb.
Yes. And then, of course, the other one was the Da Vinci Code.
Right.
No, they were the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Library.
Ooh.
So the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in the West Bank area, so, you know, like Israel-Palestine. They were used by a Jewish group called the Essenes. They're written in Hebrew and Aramaic, and they tell us stuff about the Old Testament, but they don't have anything about Jesus or any New Testament stuff. The Nag Hammadi Library, on the other hand, was found in Egypt, and it's basically, it was like this one book that was bound together of just all these different texts from different authors from different places and times, and they were mostly Gnostic. So, Gnostics were an early group of Christians that were generally enemies with the group that eventually became like official Christians, who we call a proto-Orthodox because they became what was known as Orthodox. And Gnosticism, we know that it was very popular because proto-Orthodox writers spent a lot of time writing about how they were evil and no one should follow them and like trying to refute all their ideas.
That's a good test for popularity to see how many people are writing about how evil they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like making up all these lies about how they like had orgies as like for church and stuff like that.
I don't know. I mean, why would you write that if you were trying to discourage people?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like instead of regular church, they have sex church. Well, sex church?
Oh, God. Sex church sounds like...
Okay, well, fair enough. This sounds two like... great tastes that don't taste great together.
Yeah, totally. And the Nag Hammadi Library makes clear that there were a lot of different strains of Gnostic thought also. Mm. So you can also tell it's popular because like there were enough of them to have a lot of different views. Mm. Also, because there are so many subgroups, when we talk about like what Gnostics believe, mm-hmm. quote unquote, that's a generalization just like necessarily.
Yeah, for more info, find the Twitter hashtag what Gnostics believe.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of really informative stuff there that's not written by crazy people.
This is what a real Gnostic looks like.
Yes, that's my favorite t-shirt. So yeah, we're going to be making some kind of broad statements when we talk about Gnosticism, but like whatever, good enough for a podcast.
Yeah, you're going to have to crack your Encyclopedia Britannica if you want the real story.
I don't actually. I wonder what the Encyclopedia Britannica even has about Gnosticism.
Probably has some well-researched, well-thought-out articles. Top quality publication.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Gnostic creation story.
Okay. Tell me a story, Lauren.
Now, we're all familiar with the creation story as laid out in Genesis, mm-hmm. where there was God, and he created, you know, darkness and light and shit, created the world, created animals and plants and humans. For Gnostics, they believe, so they're was a God. There is a God who's all-knowing and all-powerful and all-perfect, you know. But that is not the God that you read about in Genesis.
Mm.
This God did create things, but they weren't the earth. He created all these weird, they're called like eons and archons.
Sure. They're like the lower ranks of gods, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
But they're also like incarnations of the same God?
Yeah. It's a little unclear.
They're different emanations. That's the word they use, right?
That's the word some of them sometimes use, okay. Yeah. And they're often like associated with like virtues. So it's like, oh, yeah, like God created like grace and...
wisdom.
Yeah. It's kind of like similar to the Jewish hierarchy of angels, if you want to think of it that way. One of these eons, wisdom, aka Sophia,
mm-hmm.
which is Greek for wisdom, for some reason decided that she wanted to create a little child eon just by herself without getting God's permission. Or
she wanted something of her own on the side.
Or
so she didn't have to kick anything upstairs.
Yeah, exactly.
We all know how that goes.
Yeah. Also, like, I guess she had, like, a husband eon. It's pretty weird. I don't know. But she decided to just, like, parthenogenesize another eon, but because she did it without God's permission, it was like horrible to behold, and it was all fucked up. So she cast it out of heaven. And this little fucked up child was named Yaltabaoth, and it became the Old Testament God. And it thinks that it's the real God.
Mm-hmm.
It thinks it's the highest power and that it's perfect and all-knowing and all-powerful, but it's actually not. And so for Gnostics, that's why the world is all fucked up and there's all this pain and suffering. It's not because of human sin. It's not because of the devil. It's because we were created by this fucked up miscreant God.
Mm. We got a little runoff God.
Yeah,
we don't even have like...
little junior God.
We have like the gray market knockoff version of God.
Yeah, yeah.
We got like Prado bags.
Prado. Yeah, called Yaltabaoth, or also known as the Demiurge.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which is just Greek for like a craftsman or like a maker.
Mm.
Because he, you know,
he's not an artist.
Right. He's like a skilled craftsman.
Right.
Because he does make the world and he makes plants and animals and humans and everything. But if he were truly God or even just a higher ranking eon, then the world wouldn't be just like a shithole.
Yeah, it like doesn't it make is. Any sense. Why would you create a world so unbalanced?
Yeah.
You know?
And it seems like some Gnostic groups like thought that the Demiurge was like evil.
Mm-hmm.
And then some were like, oh, you know, he's like
doing his best.
He's like, you know, ultimately flawed, but still like pretty good, you know? Because if you like look at the laws of Moses, you know, some of them make a lot of sense, mm-hmm. right? So like if he was saying, yeah, you know, like don't murder, don't steal, you know, that guy pretty much knows what he's talking about. The shrimp stuff, I don't know. That doesn't seem real, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more to it than that. I read several detailed Gnostic creation stories that are insane. Mm-hmm. It's just like, where do you even get the details? Like, I don't even know how did this become like thought of as a sacred mythology, because it just seems like it's like just made up. It's like Scientology or something.
Right.
I don't know. Like there was one, and then they get the Jewish angel system involved,
yeah.
And then like one of them threw in like Eros, like the Greek god Eros.
Okay, sure.
And it was just like,
I mean, if you're gonna throw anything in,
yeah, you know, you got like Samael, you got like, you know, whatever, all these angels. Oh, Eros was in there, and he made people want to bone.
Mm-hmm.
He like showed them how to drink wine and how to bone. It's like, okay, that's. Pretty weird to be like, yeah, well, obviously this is how the world was created.
Well, none of those, I mean, like, if you think about all those other evil angels that we read about, most of them were concerned with pretty nerdy things.
I guess
like
that's true.
Being doctor,
yeah,
like astronomizing,
yeah, also makeup.
Well, I mean, then somebody's like, well, what do I do? I look great, but I got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And then Eros is like holding up a bottle of wine.
He's like, hey guys. So what Gnostics believed is that as humans, well, some humans have a spark of the divine in them.
Mm.
That's, you know, kind of somehow has made it through all the levels of hierarchy and through the shitty god into his creation. We still have a little spark of the real divine god in us.
Okay.
And so when we die, when our miscreant bodies die, our souls, which are our real selves, can rejoin the perfect heavenly realm where the real God lives, which is called the Pleroma.
Okay, that sounds like something horrible.
I know,
right?
It sounds like
body.
like an STD,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually Greek for fullness.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, this is like the complete heaven where everything is perfect. But to get there, you have to basically like figure out the truth about all this stuff. And understand all this stuff, which basically you have to gain knowledge, which the Greek word for knowledge is gnosis.
Mm.
It's the same root. I'm going to jump in the etymology corner really quick.
Okay. The timer is running.
Same root as the Spanish word conocer.
Okay.
Gnosis.
Okay.
And like in French, like reconnoiter, reconnaissance, those are all.
Great pronunciation, by the way.
Yeah, obviously, I don't speak French. Those are all gnosis, knowledge. So that's what Gnosticism is. It's knowledge. And then when you say you're agnostic nowadays, that's like you don't have knowledge. You just accept that you don't know whether there's a God or not. Different Gnostic groups had different views about Jesus, but for our purposes, we're going to talk about the view, basically, the main view that Jesus came down to give us this knowledge so that we could get up back to the Pleroma.
But some of them, from my very brief reading, not even a comparison to the hard work that you put in.
I spent years on this. I've been training since I was a child. They recruited me. They brought me to the gymnastics center. Sorry, go on.
Good story. But the... Some groups believe that, you know, Jesus was an element of the divine that was brought down. Some people believe that he was just a person that had figured out this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that had, you know, found the gnosis in himself and wants to awaken it in other people,
yeah.
et cetera, et cetera. So, like, in the same way that other early Christians were fighting about whether Jesus was God
mm-hmm.
or whether Jesus was a man who was inspired by God
yeah.
or somewhere in between, the Gnostics had their own versions of
these
things.
And you see it play
things.
Out, yeah. They had their own versions of it, and that are like really parallel
mm-hmm.
Because like a big controversy in the early church is like, was Jesus like physically human?
Right.
And so like Gnostics also had their their own controversies about that, like whether it was like, you know, a divine being that came down and just appeared human.
Or was he in a body, the body of a man, or was he born a man and became divine later, or all this other stuff.
Or like some thought that like he was inhabited, like he started, Jesus was a guy, and then Christ was like a divine being that inhabited him when he was baptized and that left him when he was crucified.
Mm.
And that that's why he said, my God, why have you forsaken me on the cross? Because like his divine element literally left him.
He got that scary goose sucked right out of
him. Yeah, he got the goose sucked out.
Yeah, and then he was the one who was spooked.
Yeah. So, very complex theology.
Mm-hmm.
So the weird thing, I think, is like, if I believed this type of stuff, I would want to spread this knowledge as far and wide as possible.
Uh-huh.
But Gnostics were really into keeping it secret. And Gnostic texts are often about like the secret shit that Jesus said that regular Christians don't know about or they can't understand it. And it was apparently like really rare to have, like you wouldn't have like a Gnostic church or like, oh, the church in this, you know, the Christian church in this city is Gnostic.
That's what I read as well, is that even early on, there was no like central leadership or central like orthodoxy around Gnosticism.
They would just be hiding out in other churches.
Oh, so you'd have sleeper cell.
Yeah. So you'd have, you know, your regular like proto-Orthodox church or like whatever, a Marcionite church or whatever. And there'd be a group of them in there that were like, oh, but we know all the secret shit that these, you know, everyone knows this basic stuff about Jesus, but we know all the secret shit.
It's funny how like even 100 years after Jesus' death in the early, early church, people could be like, well, you know, these idiots don't know anything.
Yeah, totally.
We got the real stuff.
Totally. They were also super, super dualistic, even more so than other Christian groups. So like, I think of that, and we've talked about it a lot on the podcast, as being like a big hallmark of Christianity, that the world we live in is sinful and bad. And, you know, if you believe in Jesus, you're living for the next world and you're living for your eternal life. And you shouldn't focus on improving this world. You should just focus on getting to heaven.
Right.
So like Gnostics, like really, they pumped that up, baby.
Mm-hmm.
They pumped that dualism right up. So it was like this world, it isn't just like bad because of human sin or whatever. Like it's a cosmic reject.
Right. Like, it's inherently flawed and
like,
unbalanced and not.
Everything about this world shouldn't even exist.
Right.
It's just like a perversion of the concept of existence. And so you really want to get out of here. They also believe that like, they believe like some humans like didn't even have the spark of the divine. So some humans were just like the same as animals and could never
go
to heaven.
I saw a little bit of that.
And then like regular Christians were like possibly could go to heaven, you know? But then like Gnostics were the true believers.
And very conveniently, I'm sure it was just like whoever was at the Gnostic club meeting. We're like, thank God we all have the spark of Gnosis in us. Well, Jimmy over there, you know.
I will bet they found a Jimmy over there to ostracize because that's what groups do.
I was going to say, like, Jimmy has a van, though.
Oh, Jimmy has a van.
Like, I don't know how we're all going to get to Alexandria if we, like, kick him out.
And, like, Timmy over here, he's great, but he's, you know, we don't have enough seats in the van.
Mm-hmm. Work on your Gnosis at home. So, and we'll be back from Alexandria in a week.
So that's why proto-Orthodox groups and other groups probably too were like, oh, like they're having orgies because they like think that this world isn't even real and like, you know, bodies don't matter. So whatever. But actually, it seems like from what we know, from what we found in the Nag Hammadi library, that.
How long did you work on that dig, by the way?
You say we.
Very confidently.
Oh, well, me and all the other extremely professional biblical scholars, who I call my friends and colleagues.
They're lucky to call you their friend.
Yeah, exactly, because I'm definitely in the top 10 of them.
Top 10 all-time biblical scholars.
Top 10 all-time colleagues, actually. I always bring cookies. They were actually probably like, super ascetic, and they were all about like punishing the body, which is also, of course, a huge strain in other groups of Christianity, and, you know, continues into the Middle Ages in very weird ways. You know, you get whatever, self-flagellation and starvation and all kinds of stuff like that. That Orthodox stuff actually was quite similar, apparently, to Gnostic practices, from what I know as some idiot with a podcast.
Right. You're not just some idiot. You're my idiot.
Oh, thank you, baby.
What we're actually here to talk about is a little thing called the Gospel of Thomas, and we will talk about it in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. You're going to hear some music, and then we'll talk about the Gospel of Thomas.
We're going to make you wait for it.
That's right. G-O-T, Sunday night, baby. Everybody knows what that means, Gospel of Thomas.
Gospel of Thomas.
Okay, we'll see you in a minute. Bye.
Bye. To Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And I wanted to give our listeners a little fish update. Mm-hmm. I mentioned last episode.
Breaking news, everybody.
That my childhood fish, Percolies, which was how my brother pronounced Hercules at the time we acquired the fish at a Halloween festival, lived for like something like 12 years and then died and stayed in my mom's freezer for another like 10 years. So I got a text from my mom after she heard the episode, and she updated me about Perkley's fate, which is that he died while we were on vacation. So there was a house sitter, and she just wrapped the fish up in a paper towel and put him in the freezer so we could, you know, bury him if we wanted, or flush him down the toilet, whatever we wanted to do. And then he just stayed there forever. And then my mom said that, unfortunately, unbeknownst to her, the fish was disposed of when she got a new fridge at that house. And
like, I'm sure, was the funeral planned for the fall?
2025.
Yes, I don't know.
Unbeknownst to my mom, the fish was unceremoniously thrown away. She gave me a sad face emoji. So Percolies was gone even before she moved. Let's all say a little prayer that Percolies can join the Pleroma.
It's how all great fish go, not with a bang, but with a whimper.
But with a plop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're talking about the Gospel of Thomas, a secret Gnostic gospel that the folks at church didn't want you to read.
That's right.
It was found in the... Oh, I'm doing fast facts now, just FYI.
Okay.
These facts are going to be fast as hell. Found in the Nag Hammadi Library in Egypt, which is just a book, but it's called a library. And the copy we have is written in Coptic, which was the main language in Egypt back in the day, before Arabic. But it was probably translated from Greek, so it's probably written in Greek.
Okay.
It's supposed to be written by Thomas, not the disciple Thomas, but Jesus' twin brother Thomas.
Oh.
Who did not exist, and who we'll hear more about in an upcoming episode. So, in the canonical Bible, there's four Gospels, and that means basically like that it's a story. It's the story of Jesus' life. So there's four of them: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. This book is called a gospel, but it has no narrative. It's just a collection of sayings. Secret sayings, to be more specific.
As it says in literally the first line, These are the secret sayings which the living Jesus spoke and which Didymus Judas Thomas wrote down.
Didymus means twin in Greek, and Thomas means twin in Aramaic.
So he's twin Judas twin.
He's twin Jewish twin. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's who he is.
A totally believable name for Jesus' twin brother.
And I don't have any. Well, I have one more fast fact, which is just basically that some people try to say that, like, oh, this is more representative of the true Jesus. Like, these things got edited out of the real Gospels. But it was probably written after the real Gospels. So that's all.
But it probably shares some of the same sources.
Yes, probably.
For example, the infamous Q source.
Yes. I've read so much about the Q source. We haven't really talked about it on the podcast. Do you want to share anything about Q?
I don't have a lot of info, but some of the stuff that ended up in the Synoptic Gospels, especially where Jesus' quotes and memorable sayings were concerned, were from this one source called Q.
It's been lost to time.
Yeah.
It's called Q because the German word for source is like Quelle. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but just
I thought it was for
Q.
Like quotes, like notable quotables.
That would be better. Let's just say it's that. Hey, everyone, guess what? We're changing the field of bibliology.
Again. I know we changed it several times before.
We're innovators. But so let's return to sentence number one.
Okay.
It's weird.
It's super weird. I mean, the whole thing is super weird. And it doesn't skimp on the weirdness early. It's not like trying to ease you into it.
No. It's like, here's Jesus' secret sayings. And it says, whoever finds the interpretation of these sayings will not experience death. So this is like very clearly Gnostic. If you gain this knowledge, if you understand the interpretations, then you will go to heaven.
I'm not sure if this is the same line and we just have different translations, but the second line in the translation that I read was, let him who seeks continue seeking until he finds. When he finds, he will become troubled. When he becomes troubled, he will be astonished, and he will rule over the all.
Yes, that is the next line, yeah. Which is interesting because, like, seek and ye shall find is a quote from the canonical Gospels. Mm-hmm. But this one takes it and just runs with it. So there's a lot of material. Basically, okay, so there's no narrative in this. It's just 114 sayings of Jesus.
And it's a strong number.
Is it?
Actually, I think it's a pretty weak number.
It's just like, what does it mean? 114? I don't know. It's not a multiple of 12. It's not a multiple of 7.
Well, I mean, they're cracking all of that symbology wide open, though. I mean, there's a lot of twos and threes in this.
That's true.
Two, one, three, and one.
And one, yeah. So a little over half of these sayings are pretty much the same as in the canonical Gospels. Mm. So you've got, like, the parable of the mustard seed is in there. The parable of the sower, where, like, a man sows seeds and some of them fall on rocky soil, some of them get eaten, but some of them bloom.
Still my pick for the all-time worst parable in the Bible. the vine tenders or the tenant farmers.
Oh, yeah. That's the one where the guy keeps sending the servants to collect rent and they keep killing him.
Yeah, and then he sends his son and they kill the son.
Yeah.
And then the parable ends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck is this about?
Well, it's God sending prophets and then
I understand
sending
that,
Jesus.
But the parable should have to do with the real world in order to make it a parable.
But
like, why
what
would
if
killing
the parable
the...
exists to just give you secret knowledge?
Wow, that makes more sense then.
Honestly.
Like, that just reading it and not understanding it brings you closer to some secret
it is actually
egg
of
knowledge.
It is kind of an interesting way to interpret or to like look at the canonical parables because you notice that every time that he says them, the disciples don't understand them and they're like, can you please explain it to us? And he's like, you guys, just figure it out. You know, so if you kind of take that idea and like build your whole theology around that, around him being like, guys, just figure it out, okay?
But the way he says figure it out in the Gospels, as far as I read them, was...
It's like, it should be obvious.
There is a correct interpretation of it, and it should be understandable and obvious.
Yeah.
Well, in this one, it's just like, hey, knowledge bomb, it just goes off.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to think about the bomb because you've already gotten blown up just by reading it.
Your phone's blowing up.
With wisdom.
With wisdom.
Who's that on the phone? It's Sophia.
And she's like, sorry for making that weird God. He was bad.
Come on up and join me in heaven when you die.
Parable of the Banquet, I think, where the rich guy invites like other rich guys to the banquet, but then they all turn him down. So then he invites poor people or like servants or something. Mm-hmm. Got the 100 sheep. You got blind leading the blind. Render unto Caesar. Remove the plank in your own eye.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of those pearls before swine.
Classic Bible stuff.
Yeah. But then there's some weird stuff.
I mean, it's not even, and then, like, the stuff gets weird from right away. Like,
oh,
I
yeah.
said,
I mean, it's all sprinkled throughout.
Yeah, because there's no narrative. It doesn't, like, progress in any meaningful way, except, I guess, you go on a journey of progression by, like, reading this stuff and changing yourself.
Yeah, a journey of getting progressively more confused and angry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just saying it doesn't need a traditional narrative because the narrative that unfolds is your own journey to wisdom.
Aha, of course.
As you are stumped by this garbage.
Totally.
It's not garbage. You know what? That was really harsh. And I apologize to all of the Gnostics out there.
Yeah, I think you should just tone down your ignorance a little bit.
You're right.
And stop calling things garbage when they're actually trash.
I just love garbage so much.
So
weird thing number one.
Yeah.
The language is very, very different from anything else that we've read in any of the canonical or non-canonical
books. Well, it's
kind
of like the book of John, right? The Gospel of John.
It's a little bit of...
Although it doesn't like share any material. Like all the stuff it shares is with the Synoptic Gospels.
Hmm.
But I feel like the Jesus in this one is most similar to the Jesus in John, who is always like just talking about like mystical shit.
I think that's fair. But the mysticism in this is like on another level.
True.
Like it's like, he's like, hey, for example... Here's unexplained concept A, and it contradicts explainable concept B. That's the end of the sentence.
Correct. Yeah. Do you want to give an example of that?
Yeah, let me find one. Jesus himself explains it a little bit in a passage where there's actually like a small narrative packed into one of these.
Yeah, sometimes the sayings will have a little back and forth
and
between
in this,
Jesus and his disciples.
And in this one, it's a very gospelish moment where Jesus asks his disciples to compare him to something.
Yes.
And then
So Peter says he's like an angel.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matthew says he's like a philosopher.
Right.
And then Thomas, I'm not sure if that's supposed to be the disciple Thomas or our author Thomas, says he can't compare him to anything.
Right. And then the text says he took him, speaking of Thomas, and withdrew and told him three things. When Thomas returned to his companions, they asked him, "What did Jesus say to you?" Thomas said to them, "If I tell you one of the things which he told me, you will pick up stones and throw them at me. A fire will come out of the stones and burn you up."
Yep.
So, like, Jesus had secrets even from the disciples.
Yeah.
That only, like, some of the disciples got these next-level secrets. And even in the text that's supposed to be about his secret sayings...
You still can't hear them.
You still can't hear them.
Yeah.
They're too crazy.
Yeah.
Because they're crazy contradictions of all the things that you think, I assume.
Or something.
I'm trying to imagine what could be so incendiary as to literally set rocks aflame.
I mean, I wonder if it's like the Greek god Eros was part of creation. You know, I wonder if it was like a Xenu style reveal, like get you in and then be like, because honestly, these creation stories are wacky.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're wacky.
Another thing that I thought was strange in here, there's a line that says, "The disciples said to Jesus, 'We know that you will depart from us. Who is to be our leader?' Jesus said to them, 'Wherever you are to go to James the righteous, for whose sake heaven and earth came into being.'"
Oh, yeah. I didn't get that at all.
Now, that I assume is Jesus's brother, James.
Yeah, probably. Or could be the disciple, James.
Yeah. It's just weird. In all of this mysticism, where it's like, you know, you have to forgo the body and like move beyond yourself so that you can leave behind this corpse of a world and ascend like a spirit into heaven or whatever. Like there's still a little bit of that politics mixed in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like this is clearly, even in these crazy Gnostic texts.
Interesting.
I'll bet you have some of this internecine, I don't know how you say it.
I don't either.
Conflict sprinkled on top, like a delicious political Jimmy.
Thousands and thousands. Can we talk about some of these corpse
Oh, yeah, versus... absolutely. They talk a lot about corpses.
Yeah.
Which is kind of metal.
So, okay, here's one I wrote down. At one point, Jesus and the disciples see a guy carrying a lamb, and Jesus remarks that the man can't eat the lamb until after he's killed it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, therefore, you too look for a place for yourselves within repose, lest you become a corpse and be eaten.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what it means. I guess just don't, just find knowledge and go to heaven instead of
being obsessed with your body, because you could, that's just like a lamb's body that could be killed and eaten, I
guess. There's also that one about the lion.
Yes. I don't get that at all.
Blessed is the lion which becomes man when consumed by man, and cursed is the man whom the lion consumes, and the lion becomes man. But shouldn't the man become the lion in the second example, and that's why he's cursed? Or, like, it seems to defy even its own internal logic.
It does, but think about what your brain is doing right now. Are you working towards gnosis right now?
No, I'm rejecting it. I'm going, this is dumb.
Well, but I mean, like, even in rejection, you might be changing the way that you think.
I think I'm just, like, not one of the chosen.
Well, I think that as well. But you wouldn't hear me say that out loud. Another corpse mention. Jesus said, whoever has come to understand the world has found only a corpse, and whoever has found a corpse is superior to the world.
Yeah.
So,
okay, I think I get that one.
Yeah.
That one's like, yeah, the world is bullshit.
Yeah. once you
Jesus is Fiona Apple, and he's like,
definitely,
this world is bullshit.
once you see the world for the stinking corpse that it is,
yeah,
you are better than the world.
Yeah.
Because you know.
There's also, I like, his disciples ask when Jesus will be revealed to them, which I guess he isn't already, I don't know. And he says that he will be revealed when you disrobe without being ashamed and take up your garments and place them under your feet like little children and tread on them. Then you will see the Son of the Living One and you will not be afraid.
Well, I mean, this is the same message, which is to leave your garments, like the physical,
yeah, like
physical raiments behind.
Yes.
Tread on them like
nice
little
vocab words.
Little children, and
yeah,
using the innocence and piercing wisdom of a small child's
right.
mind.
A 7-day-old child, as mm-hmm. Jesus specifies. That's who you should ask for advice from, he says. A 7-day-old child. Hasn't been circumcised yet. That happens on day 8.
Interesting.
There's also the one that we quoted in 2 Clement a couple episodes ago, which is, in 2 Clement, they interpreted it to mean something very ordinary,
mm-hmm.
but it sounds a lot more fucked up here. So it's when you make the two one, and when you make the inside like the outside and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and female one and the same, so that the male be not male nor the female female, and when you fashion eyes in place of an eye, and a hand in place of a hand, and a foot in place of a foot, and a likeness in place of a likeness, then will you enter the kingdom of heaven.
I don't know what that means.
I mean, I think it's just like when you transcend physicality.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no male or female.
But you're replacing your feet with, like, spiritual feet.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. Which, like, seems just like a really complicated way of saying that.
I agree.
It seems like unnecessarily complicated.
Well, yeah, but that's why you have to, I mean, that's a hallmark of a secret society.
I guess
is
so.
Is saying simple things in a complicated way. What about, speaking of simple things,
uh-huh.
there are a few oddly sort of quotidian
uh-huh.
Commandments in here.
Uh-huh.
For example, if you do not fast as regards the world, you will not find the kingdom. If you do not observe the Sabbath as a Sabbath, you will not see the Father. This is Christianity 101.
Yes.
Why is this in the
Although
secret
then
sayings?
Later he says that, like, fasting doesn't matter.
Well, even more oddly quotidian, I'd say, is this line where Jesus says, do not be concerned from morning until evening and from evening until morning about what you will wear.
Yeah, well, that's in...
I mean, that's a good metaphor, too.
But I think that's also in the canonical Gospels.
Is that true?
I think so, yeah. And it means basically the same thing there, that just don't be concerned with this world.
Yeah.
Be concerned with the next one.
It's just funny when at one moment you're like, once you see what a rotting corpse the world is, you will like ascend yeah. above the human trash. And then in the next line, it's like, hey, don't be concerned
you
about everything that you
wear.
You don't
gotta worry about fashion. It's like, well, yeah, you just told us to take off our bodies and jump on them like children. Of course I'm not going to be worried about what I wear. Also, this one, I think, may be the one that I'm least clear on in the entire book. The kingdom of the father is like a certain man who wanted to kill a powerful man.
Mm-hmm.
In his own house, he drew his sword and stuck it into the wall in order to find out whether his hand could carry through. Then he slew the powerful man. Nico's nodding at me like that gif of Christian Bale and Kermit the Frog nodding at each other.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
What the hell? Who's the certain man? And who's the powerful man?
And why did it matter that he like tested out his own strength at home before he tried to kill somebody?
And why did he test it by sticking a sword in a wall? What does that mean?
I mean, we got to sign up for their newsletter or something. Somebody's going to get paid for us to know this knowledge. That's how it works, right?
Oh, you think it's like a pyramid scheme?
Wow. I mean, like,
wow.
The pyramids were created by ancient aliens.
Okay. Yeah, that's what, yeah, yeah.
And they invented the first
from the Pleroma
scheme.
One thing in here is that Jesus says that no human is equal to John the Baptist.
That's right.
He says John the Baptist is the holiest man. But anybody who makes it to heaven is necessarily
equal to
holier than any human such as John the Baptist.
Yeah. I like that. I think he should get more props, John the Baptist.
John the Baptist.
Yeah, I mean, he did some strong work.
Apparently there were some Gnostic groups that thought that like John the Baptist was the real guy and Jesus like was stealing his thunder.
Yeah, once you assume that there are like secrets hidden under every layer of information that you're provided, then, like, anything's fair game. Like, you can come up with some crazy shit.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. That's, like, how conspiracy theories work.
I know, it's great. Yeah. It's like you take a grain of truth, and then you're like, but underneath the surface, there's some crazy shit going on.
Yeah.
Like, for example, underneath the surface of our world,
uh-huh.
where, like, the mole men live in yeah. the Hollow Earth.
Correct, yeah. Or we live in the Hollow Earth. That one's still blowing my mind.
I like that there are two Hollow Earth theories.
We learned about it in our Ezekiel episode, yeah. and I still think about it so often. I'm still like, the giant trees, they became mesas.
Good stuff.
But also something that's interesting, like a connection that I'm seeing due to my conspiracy theorist mind, is like, in modern conspiracy theories, you see a lot of this idea that there's this secret crazy shit going on, but that the people doing this secret crazy shit will always like signal it with some symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And like what was super crazy to me recently was the whole Pizzagate thing.
Sure.
So like the name of the restaurant from which Hillary Clinton was supposedly running a child sex abuse ring was Comet Ping Pong. And so they were like, well, the initials are CP. So that means child pornography. And it was like, if they were running a child sexual abuse ring, why would they find some secret way to signal that? Why wouldn't they just keep it a secret? You know? So I'm kind of wondering if that applies in some way to this, where it's like, yeah, there's all this secret crazy stuff that they don't want you to know. But obviously Jesus left a little hint. And the hint was that he said, you know, the blind are leading the blind. And that means blah, blah, blah. Like that means the physical form is blind because we live in this fake world.
And that means you can't trust any of the other apostles or disciples.
I mean, you can't trust anything about anything.
Yeah.
That's like how when people get too deep into conspiracy theories.
It does start to break down.
Yeah. You can't really tell what's real or not anymore. Which is kind of a big problem in our society right now. But let's not get too political.
Instead, I just want to point out that Jesus said, "It is I who am the light which is above them all. It is I who am the all. From me did the all come forth, and unto me did the all extend." Now that's great, just mystical nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
"Split a piece of wood, and I am there. Lift up the stone, and you will find me there." So he's both the lizard and the spizder.
The what now?
The spizder.
Oh, the spizder.
Mm-hmm.
And the lizard.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. This is an incident in my life in high school, is that like my friend was over at my house, and then my dad like started on this diatribe about how like God isn't in the wood or like stones or anything, like, and that's like animism or whatever. And I was so embarrassed that I drove my friend home, because I was like, what the fuck is even happening? Why is my dad ranting about God? And now I wish that this was in the Bible for real, so that I could have been like, actually.
Oh my God. According to the Gospel of Thomas,
he is in the stone and also the wood.
Yeah. Well, he's under the stone and he's inside the wood.
Yeah.
Like a spider or lizard would
yeah,
be.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So then the last verse is really weird.
Very strange.
Interesting. It's weird, even like it doesn't seem to fit with the rest of it necessarily. I don't know. Peter, the disciple, Simon Peter, says, "Let Mary leave us, for women are not worthy of life."
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, Mary hasn't been mentioned yet.
No.
There's been no mention of her previously. So just all of a sudden she's here and Peter wants her to leave because women are not worthy of life. And Jesus says, "I myself shall lead her in order to make her male, so that she may become a living spirit resembling you males. For every woman who will make herself male will enter the kingdom of heaven."
So this is supposed to be a metaphor as well about the same central thing, I think, which is
yes,
throwing off the physical form.
Clearly.
And becoming all mental.
And,
so like this
and
must
I mean,
be their idea of a split, that women are physically bound because they have children or something like that.
I mean, is it? So like earlier there was the line about like there is no male or female.
Right, but there was also a line about, you know, you won't know true gnosis until male becomes female or they become one specifically.
Yeah, they become one and male is not male and female is not female.
Right.
But so then why here is it saying that the female will become male and not that they will become one? Like this was throughout the book,
that's what I'm saying. I think it's a metaphor, just like throwing off your clothes.
Hmm.
Just like if you're thinking like a female,
uh-huh,
you know, about clothes, shoes,
makeup.
Mm-hmm. But you got to throw it off and think like a man. Think about money, sports, shoes, or what? I don't know. In their reckoning,
whatever men think about, sports and shoes. Mainly.
In their reckoning, I think men think about fucking gnosis or like moving past this
but
strange corpse of a world.
See, I don't think so, because I feel like maleness was earlier denigrated as a form of physicality
That's a good point.
That's preventing you.
That is something that you're supposed to move past.
Yeah.
Now.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, clearly this is like a kind of random assortment of sayings that aren't necessarily internally consistent.
Yeah. And I will say, reading it, it's like jumping all over the place from like the relatively safe canonical to like the bizarre mystical from
yeah,
like line to line. So it's slightly disorienting.
And like very concrete stuff that makes sense into just like a bunch of random like abstract nouns that don't hold together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just so weird. It's so weird that all of a sudden Mary is like in danger of getting kicked out. First of all, like Mary's presence, as if she were a disciple.
But I don't know. Yeah, this one in particular creates, it's a very strange way to end the text as
yeah,
well, because it creates this odd narrative overhang where we're like, why is Simon complaining about Mary now? Like, what's going on?
And what happens to Mary?
Yeah, we'll never find out.
Did she make it to heaven? Did she make it to the Pleroma? Did she jump on her body like a child?
She had to have. But we'll find all that and more next time on Sunday School Dropouts.
We'll never find any of that. And nor will anyone else. Goodbye.
So, my dear, how would you rate this book?
I think I'm going to give it 2 out of 6 Hands in Place of a Hand.
Wow. You were slamming this book.
I'm slamming it because the more I think about it, it's like, how to express this? So, like, half the shit is normal. And half the shit is weird.
Uh-huh.
But the weird shit isn't actually that weird. It's just, like, complicated ways of saying, like, that the world is bullshit and having a physical form is bullshit. And it just seems like you don't really need to get all fucking mystic to say that. That doesn't, you don't need to find a bunch of secret ways to express that. Regular Christianity already expresses that in a much more straightforward way. I don't know. I mean, I agree. I agree that I want to be uploaded to the cloud and not have to suffer in a physical body.
I even grabbed a spot on here that was something for Lauren specifically. Jesus said, if the flesh came into being because of spirit, it is a wonder. But if spirit came into being because of the body, it is a wonder of wonders. Indeed, I am amazed at how this great wealth has been made home in this poverty.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Bodies are bullshit.
And you're a strong anti-body activist.
Yeah, I would like to live in the cloud. I would like to be a robot. However, just say you want to be a robot. That's, you know?
Yeah, a spiritual bot.
If you want to be a spiritual robot, just say that you want to be a spiritual robot and don't make a big deal out of it. That's what I think.
Don't obfuscate that.
Yeah. What? How are you going to write this book?
I'm thinking I'm going to give it 5 out of 8 passersby.
Okay.
I'm taking that from the line in the book, which I think was maybe the best, which is just, it's 4 words. Jesus said, become passersby. Now that is strong mysticism. Because, like, that's the message of the book.
Yes.
In only 4 words.
Yeah, see, that should just be the whole book.
That's a deep statement, though.
If that's just the whole book, that's great. You can meditate on that for hours. It's just 2 words.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need all this hand waving.
Yeah, or like retreads of like the greatest hits and not, if you don't mind saying.
Some of these not so greatest hits.
Not some of the greatest hits of the parable. The parable
like the
game.
One about paying taxes.
That's nobody's favorite story. But I will say, Jesus said, become passersby. There we go, like Whoppers Jr.
Yeah.
Or Attorneys General.
Chiefs of Staves.
I like that because, I mean, I like a little bit of this fresh flavor tossed on top of this Christian stuff. But at the same time, it doesn't have a narrative and there doesn't really feel like an ideological flow throughout the piece. I feel like if you would just rearrange some of this stuff so that you were like taking somebody on a journey with some of these statements.
Could use a lot more craft.
Then you would might have like a really effective piece of mystical stuff because like just by reading through and maybe even starting with stuff that you would recognize or the more straightforward stuff and moving towards the mystical, you'd be like, oh, there were things I didn't understand about this stuff I already knew.
Now I'm considering this in light of all the stuff I'd read before. But instead, it's just kind of
all over the place.
Yeah.
And that may have to do, you know, more with like the fact that we only have a couple of versions of this thing, I guess.
I mean, that's possible.
Or they're fragmentary or whatever. But anyway, we can only judge what we have in front of us. And I judge it a 5 out of 8.
that's pretty good.
I agree. That's fair. I gave it a little more credit than you did. I think just because I have a certain fondness for like weird
mystical
stuff. Garbage.
Yeah, I don't know why.
That's fair.
It just seems like.
I mean, it's too close to religion for you. That makes perfectly sense.
It just seems like give it to me straight, Doc.
I understand.
Tell me what I got to do about my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make it a secret.
Tell me where to point this soul. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. Don't make it a secret.
Oh, fair enough. Well, that is the Gospel of Thomas. We'll be doing more Gnostic stuff in the future. TBA.
TBD.
Mm-hmm.
TBB, TBC, all the TBs.
That's right. Every kind except antibiotic resistance.
MRSA, TB.
No thank you, please. And while we might not have any flavor of tuberculosis, what we do have is some lovely listener letters.
I like Cool Ranch tuberculosis.
That's right. Or Southwest Picante. South of the border flavor.
Up
in Canada, they like...
they like tomato...
Vinegar and salt.
Salt? Well, that's normal.
They call it, what, full-dressed? Full-dressed TB?
Yeah, something like a full dressing or something.
Ketchup flavor, too.
Yeah. Well, that's fine, though. They have universal health care. I trust them. Mm-hmm. They know better than us.
That's a good point. Like, lording over...
We're like, oh, lording... Canada, they put their milk in bags. And also, like, their society works.
Yeah, it's like, well, we have so many more types of snack food. All right. Congratulations. Anyway, neighbors to the north, we're real proud of you. Our listener David wrote in and said, I'm sure by now that you've heard that our current president's cabinet has regular Bible study meetings where the pastor compares the president to biblical figures. I wish I did not know that. Now, I don't want to push you toward commenting on the current administration since you're not that kind of podcast. Thank you for acknowledging that we're not that kind of podcast. We don't even read the news more than several hundred times per day. But, David writes, it does raise an interesting question. What biblical figure is 21st President Chester A. Arthur most like? Lauren?
Well, I listened to the episode of the podcast Presidents Are People Too about Chester A. Arthur, and I don't remember it very well, but I do remember that he cleaned up the civil service and made everything less corrupt and above board in the government. So I'm going to say that he's King Josiah in, it was the Book of Kings and Chronicles, who cleaned up the temple and rediscovered the Torah. So David, that's the answer to your burning question. Chester A. Arthur equals King Josiah. What do you think, Nico?
Jesus Q. Christ.
Jesus Q. Christ.
Next question.
Okay. Listener Justin wrote in, a former missionary kid and conservative evangelical who began to have doubts and then ended up leaving the faith when Donald Trump's campaign started.
You're on a wild ride.
Just a couple years ago. I mean, not even. And he says that's caused a lot of conflict in his life. He had a really good line in the email, which is that the bride of Christ spread her legs for Donald Trump, which he says it didn't go over well with certain people.
Those people had, first of all, no taste, because that's great.
But he pointed out that he is taking the imagery from the Book of Ezekiel. So that is some biblically sound zinger there. Justin also sent us a dog to bless and a cat to curse. The dog is named Argo and the cat is named Loki, which I feel like sums up the reason why dogs need blessings and cats need curses. Why would you name your cat Loki unless needed curses? Because it was a chaotic mischief god.
Mm-hmm. So to you, Argo, I say, if those who lead you say to you, see, the kingdom is the sky, then the birds of the sky will precede you. If they say to you, it is the sea, then the fish will precede you. Rather, the kingdom is inside of you, Argo, and it is outside of you. When you come to know yourself, then you will become known, and you will realize that it is you who are the Son of the Living Father.
Wow. Very nice blessing for Argo. And to Loki, I say, woe to Loki, for they are like a dog sleeping in the manger of oxen.
No.
For neither does he eat, nor does he let the oxen eat. That's right. Cursed him by comparing him to a dog. Cats hate that.
And that will do it for Sunday School Dropouts this week. As always, you can follow the show at SunSchoolDrop on Twitter.
And on Facebook, you can follow me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill. And follow Nico on SoundCloud, NikoBakulich.
That's where you can find all of the original music from the show, as well as anything else I am doing.
Also, of course, thank you to Elise Carlton for our beautiful logo. And if you guys want to leave us a little bitty iTunes review, we would be very, very, very grateful. You could be like iTunes user Sunseed is my friend, who gave us 5 stars and said, as a liberal feminist Christian, it's nice to have a quote-unquote Bible study, thanks for putting that in quotes, that isn't trying to pander to someone's views or ideas of God.
That's right. We never pander, and we never slander, except for all of the many slanderous comments that we have made on this show.
We never pander, but we love pandas.
Mm-hmm. We never pander, but we'll get your dander up, that is.
Yep. That is 100% true. And also, you can email us at contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol. That is sundayschooldropouts.lolnot.com.
That's where you can send any questions, comments, pets that need to be cursed or blessed. Of course, we require photos in order for those to be effective.
Yeah, and Argo and Loki were both super fucking cute.
Super cute.
And there's a picture of them snuggling, and it's cute as hell.
She likes different animal friends.
I like it when two different species are friends with each other, because that means that racism is not going to win.
An interesting extrapolation. But I tell you what, we'll talk about that off air, and we will see you next week on okay. Sunday School Dropouts.
We'll see you Sunday.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.